Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Grok Radio. The following broadcast is made possible by the friends and partners of CYI Worldwide Ministries and Grok Radio. And the views expressed in this program and by our guests may not necessarily reflect those of CYI Worldwide Ministries or its staff. And now, enjoy the show.
You stand on the shore of the ocean watching the tide come in. You sense the call of the sea beckoning to take you in further. You step forward little by little, not knowing what to expect, but expecting more. You keep going as the ocean calls you to enter in to deeper waters.
Welcome back to the Deeper Waters podcast. I am Nick Peters, your host. Today, Allie and I are just getting back from Atlanta. We had a very good week together. And I'd like to remind you also that this Monday, I will be doing a live debate with Matthew Ferguson of Adversus Apologetica at 7 p.m. You'll be praying for me on that. We're going to be debating, is it reasonable to believe that Jesus rose from the dead? By the way, I'm arguing, yes, it is. Now, our show today, it's going to be a mature show. So if you've got small children and you're a parent, which you definitely are if you have children, then act accordingly. You might want to listen to this show later or put them in another room or something. But this is a show that I think every young person eventually needs to hear. Anyone who cares about young people needs to hear. We're going to be talking sexual ethics today. We're going to be talking the hookup culture. And for that, my guest is going to be Dr. Frieda Busch. So, Dr. Busch, are you there?
I am here, Nick. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on today. Now, my audience might not know who you are, so why should they be paying attention to what you have to say today?
Well, I'd first say I'm a health professional who has been in women's health for over 40 years. I'm a fellow in the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, so I'm a board-certified practicing OBGYN. And I'm also a wife of 44 years, a mother of four, and a grandmother of eight. So I have a lot of professional medical experience working with women's health, focusing on sexual activity and as a interest, but I'm also a person who has a vital interest in helping our young people make good decisions for their lives.
And this is especially in the area of sexual ethics. So why is this such a big deal today? I mean, we see in our culture today that sexual activity is very prolific out there. That I remember when I was in high school, for instance, and the Monday after prom, what everyone was talking about was what hotel everyone went to. But what's the big deal, really? Does this really matter?
Well, a couple of things come to mind immediately. One is you mentioned when you were in high school, and sounds like you're younger than I am, so I'll go back even further. So when I was in high school, it was very uncommon for young women to engage in sexual activity before marriage. It was expected that you would wait for marriage and that you would marry and stay married. Now, I have to admit, there was one young lady in my high school class that did get pregnant, but she did get married. And so it was the norm, if you would. You got married earlier than young women do today. You know, got married usually out of high school or 18, 19, 20. That was not uncommon. But nevertheless, that was the dream of every young lady, and the young men looked forward to getting jobs so they could take care of their families.
Yeah.
Fast forward to today, young women are delaying sexual activity until after college. And so there is this big gap in which they have opportunities, if you would, to be sexually active without the commitment that was anticipated. And I don't need to go into the social issues that that brings forward, including increase in sexually transmitted diseases, increase in out-of-wedlock pregnancies, and the implications economically that that brings with increasing in poverty, in just a number of issues, poor attainment of education. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, is the issue. We have gone from a culture that valued marriage and commitment. We valued family traditional units, if you would, mother, father, raising their own biological children. And we've now gone to a culture that seems to value more individual freedom, and we're beginning to get consequences that nevertheless impact what happens to all of us.
Now,
and they're negative
said,
consequences for the individuals.
Now, you said something. I'm wondering if you said something there, but you'd say that women are putting off sexual activity into after college. Do you mean they're putting off marriage into after college?
Thank you for correcting me. I meant women are delaying marriage until after college.
Yeah.
Therefore, they're becoming sexually active with all of the consequences of sexual activity outside of a committed, mutually monogamous relationship. And that's really what marriage represents.
Yeah, we have to be clear, of course, when we say this, because, I mean, we are Christians here, but we also want to make clear we're not anti-sex, of course, and we're not anti-people enjoying sex, but there does seem to be a consequence when it's done outside of marriage, and it just seems like so many people in our culture are just saying, you know, it's no big deal, it's just an activity like any other activity. So is it really a big deal? What makes this different from anything else?
Well, I totally agree that Christians are not anti-sex. As a matter of fact, we recognize God as the creator of human beings, of human of the world. And in God's creation in Genesis, he began with creation of male and female after his image. And he then told them, commanded them actually, to be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And the only way they could do that was to have sexual activity. So the Creator created sex, and he also, after he created man, he said, this is good. So I think Christians of all people are not or should not be anti-sex because of the way it began. And further in the second chapter of Genesis, he told the man and the woman to leave and cleave. So to leave their father and mother and cleave to each other, and the two unite to become one flesh. And that is how sexual activity is carried out. The male and the female join together in that reproductive process. It is also recreational. It's good. They want to repeat that activity. And in the repetition of that sexual act, that's where procreation or pregnancy occurs. And it also bonds the male and woman together if they've united to become one flesh. So they stay and care for the children that are reproduced. So I could tell you also how God created or established the hormones that are released in the brain and in the body that make sex enjoyable and therefore makes us want to repeat that with the dopamine, the oxytocin, the vasopressin. All of those things were part of the human body that allows us to enjoy it and to reproduce.
Yeah, that'd be a very good area for us to go into so we can get a better understanding of what are talking about, why is it that this is enjoyed so very much? And I'm assuming it's going to be different how it works out for men and women both. So if that's correct, if you can explain both of those, that'd be great.
Oh, I'd love to. Let me just first tell you that when we were created, I don't believe God's ever commanded us to do something without giving us the ability to do it. And there is much scientific research that shows that human beings were hardwired to connect to each other in that sexual act. So we are made to desire for close attachment to one another, beginning even with our young people. If you find a baby find a baby in a crib and you do not love him and you do not cuddle and touch him, then that baby will develop what we call a condition called failure to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when the mom and the man and the woman get together, they enjoy touching and rubbing together, and that releases a hormone called oxytocin in the woman that makes her bond to whoever is touching and hugging her, which means that even with her child, when she bonds and touches that child, she also releases that oxytocin, which allows her then to take care of that baby. That's one of the purposes of breastfeeding, actually. So what you have in a woman, a release of oxytocin that makes her want to touch, repeat that touch, and bond to the person who is doing that touch for her. What happens to the man is that his brain actually releases vasopressin, which makes him then want to bond to whoever is touching him. And so you have the man enjoying the touch and the hugging and attaching to the person who is touching him. You have the woman by oxytocin that has a similar response. And when they enjoy the touching, then that leads to sexual excitement, and that's where the dopamine comes in, and that gives you a reward signal for the touching and hugging. And sex, penile vaginal penetration, is the next step that's going to come out of that. And so you have these three hormones that are working together to reward them for the sexual act. It feels good. They want to repeat it. You've got the oxytocin and vasopressin that makes them want to bond together. And so the two unite to become one. And in that intercourse or sexual act, sperm is released. At the right time of the month, the egg is fertilized. And so another person is reproduced in that sexual act. And thus, our race survives. Our human race continues as a result of that. So I say God made it good so we would enjoy doing it, so that we would reproduce and the world would continue.
You know, I find this to be so incredibly revealing, and much of the stuff was stuff that I had no idea would be said today. But for instance, my wife and I have been married a little over 3 years now, and we, as people who listen to the show know, we both have Asperger's, which makes it an interesting marriage for us. And yes, she actually did get married right out of high school. She was about to turn 20 when she got married, and I was about to turn 30. So yes, I robbed the cradle big time, as everyone knows. But being on the spectrum, generally, we both don't like being touched at all. I mean, I don't even like sometimes when my own parents touch me some. But with my own wife, it's something very different. It's, yeah, she's the only one who can touch me because it's her. And at the same time, I can say that we do have that bond back close, because I loved my wife the day I married her, but being with her more and more over time, it just increases that love more and more. That bond just gets stronger and stronger, and that's the way it was meant to be.
Absolutely, and that was the design of the designer. So when we touched and hugged in any meaningful way, mm-hmm. we bond even to other people. So that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. Human beings are hardwired to connect to each other. And that's why the babies, if they are not held and cuddled, then they will fail to thrive. And it's a human characteristic that is made for us. Friendships are very important to us.
Yeah.
Again, we are made to connect to other people.
Mm-hmm. I think Jennifer Roback Morse, a Ruffin student, that's how I found about you, has talked about how children that aren't loved in these kinds of situations kind of develop either attachment disorder or institutional autism, where they don't have the condition genetically, but they don't know how to connect with people socially because they've never got to experience this kind of connection. Is that correct?
That is correct, and that's why we try to do what we call meaningful touch. You try to hold them and talk to them. The on-face position is a position that is very important for mothers and their children because as you are, whether you're breastfeeding or bottle feeding, you're looking at that child as you're holding the bottle in their mouth. Their eyes connect with yours, and you usually stroke as you are doing that feeding or as you're changing the diaper, and that, again, releases those bonding hormones into your brain and helps you to feel more connected with them. I just think it's so often important for us to understand, too, that those touchings are what we call value neutrals and the releasing of those hormones. So it doesn't tell you this is a good touch or this is a bad touch or this is a good person or a bad person. The brain is values neutral, and so it releases that hormone regardless, because of the touch that is being done. And that's one of the reasons I say to parents, it's important for you to put value in your children and to teach them rules of social conduct so that they can guide or help make discrimination about who touches them, when they touch them, how they touch them, because it's... the brain is going to release those hormones regardless.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are so many more questions to ask right now. I think I'm going to go ahead and take a break already because I think the next question I have will really open things up a bit. So I'm Nick Peters. I'm on the air with Dr. Frieda Busch. Today we're discussing sex and the hookup culture. We'll be back after this break.
Join Unituber and Army Girl for Christ as they discuss spiritual warfare, spiritual preparedness, the end times, life issues, and personal and spiritual growth. That's www.truthradionet.com. Truthradionet.com.
We're back with Dr. Frieda Busch, and I'd like to go ahead and give you our call-in number, and I hope some of you will be calling in with some questions, because this is really an important topic. The call-in number is 714-242-5180. Now, Dr. Busch, you were talking about how important it is to form connections and to form friendships, and of course, with friendships, I mean, it's good to have multiple friends. We know that. So I can hear someone out there saying, well, if it's good to have connections and it's good to have multiple friendships, what's the big deal then about sex? I mean, that was just help us connect to each other, won't it? So shouldn't we be out there encouraging people to have sex?
Well, that's the thing that's important to understand is that any experiences that we have will alter the brain and make you, it will mold the brain and change your behavior going forward. So, for example, one of the things that we don't understand is that the brain is not fully mature until the mid-20s. So your ability to discriminate between what is appropriate, what is not, to make judgments, to be able to see long-term into the future, is not fully developed until the mid-20s. So if you start having sexual activity, sex is a very powerful activity. Mm-hmm. It is going to connect you or attach you to that person, whether you want to be attached to them or not. It is going to bond you. So you really do need to reserve sex until you are more mature and to decide, is this a healthy relationship for me? Is this a healthy person that I want to be attached to or connected to? And your ability to make that discrimination is better when the brain is more fully formed than it is as a teenager or as a child. So what we now know from PET scans, MRIs, and other brain studies, imaging, that the brain continues to develop from birth until that prefrontal cortex is fully formed in the mid-20s. And at that point, you're able to make not just decisions about you're better able to make decisions about judgment, seeing into the future, doing abstract thinking, seeing beyond what is obvious, planning for the future, understanding rules of social conduct, and you are, I would say you make better decisions at 25 than you do at 15, and you make better decisions at 15 than you would at 10 or 5, simply because the brain cells are better developed. And our life experiences molds the brain until it finally sets in its adult form. So that if you start having sexual activity when you are a teenager, or if you are, you know, even younger, then it's going to have an effect on you regardless, and your brain will begin to see that activity as normal without you being able to make the discrimination as to the effects long term. So some of the things, let me just tell you, some of the things that happen to a young person when they get involved, I say prematurely, in sexual activity, it affects them emotionally as well as physically. So sex is not only a powerful experience to the body, the touching and rubbing we've talked about earlier that feels good, but it's a powerful brain experience as well. But when you are having sex, all of you is involved. It's not just a physical act and feels good, let's do it, but it involves the body, the mind, and the spirit. And so you've got to consider that young people who get involved sexually are more likely to become depressed, more likely to become involved in other behaviors such as drugs, alcohol. It's usually, it's not an uncommon combination. More young people who get involved sexually active don't have long-term, mutually monogamous, committed relationships. So the more partners you have, the more you mold your brain to begin to accept that behavior as normal. And so it impedes your ability to be able to commit to someone when you're ready. You're more likely to get involved in multiple relationships. Even if you cohabitate, you're less likely to be able to form long-term relationships. And so it's not just you deciding you will or will not do this, but your brain becomes molded and actually set in that as a normal activity, not recognizing, let's just say that your goal is to eventually be in a healthy relationship. Your goal is to finish high school, finish college, get married, but you start behaviors at 14 or 15 that don't lend that to materialize, because you're actually establishing a pattern in your brain that's different from the goals that you thought you were going to achieve. Let me just give you an example. I had a young woman in my practice who was 14 years old. Her mama brought her into the office to get on birth control and to teach her about condoms. And when I took her sexual history, found out that she was had started having sex when she was 12.
Oh, gosh.
And already she had had 14 different partners. And when I asked how did she decide about her partner, she says, well, I only have sex with my boyfriend. So she had accepted having sex with her boyfriend as normal or as okay. But already between 12 and 14 years of age, she's had 14 different boyfriends, therefore 14 different partners. So she was molding her brain to look at that as normal, but that's not her life goal. Her life goal was to finish high school, finish college, and get married. But her behavior is sabotaging the very thing that she desires for herself.
And what was her mother doing during all of this? That's what I'm wondering.
I'm not sure what was happening before, but I appreciated and encouraged the mother and thanked her, actually, for bringing her daughter in.
Yeah.
Because what she was setting her up for, even with the birth control and the condoms, without understanding the emotional and spiritual consequences of sexual activity, she was setting her up for continuation of that behavior. Just don't get pregnant. Just don't get an STD. So it gave me an opportunity to explain to her, the mother, that the physical prevention of pregnancy is a wholesome objective for a 14-year-old. And so we could put her on birth control. We could explain all that to her. The wholesome prevention of sexually transmitted disease with the use of condoms also had a benefit. But neither of those was going to affect her behavior long term if she didn't also help her to understand that she needed to delay sex until she were in a more committed relationship, because she could rewire and reestablish a different behavior in her brain. And she needed to look at the whole person, not just the physical consequences of pregnancy or just the physical consequences of STDs. And I have a lot of information I could tell you about STDs and pregnancy, both when you have multiple partnering.
But you know, what I'm also looking at this story and thinking that she's also setting herself up to be used by all these multiple guys as well, because women become much more emotionally attached, I think, than the men do. And not to say that we don't become emotionally attached, but for a man, there's usually much more physical pleasure involved than there is emotional pleasure. And so if he'll just go to wherever he can get what he wants at the cheapest price, but for a woman, it's different. Am I correct with this?
Well, I can tell you, women are different from men.
Yep.
And we are wired different from men. And so, yes, that is, excuse me, that is certainly true that we internalize more of the relationship than men usually do. I think anatomy may have something to do with that. I tell young ladies, we're innies and men are outies, and so we receive and internalize more. And so they have to consider that. And if they have any question about the difference in their reaction, all they have to do is see what happens after they have had relations with the guy and how mm-hmm. their view of him changes. Mm-hmm. And how they are feeling so hurt the next day or next week when they see him now pursuing someone else. Mm-hmm. And they are left emotionally injured.
You know, we can, when we talk about this kind of thing, you mentioned couples who are cohabitating and such, because you said earlier that usually when they got right out, when girls got right out of high school, they were getting married, and my wife pretty much did the same thing, and that's good and fine. It's to be expected. It's something we can all hope for. But what about people who are pretty much the same age and such, and they're just saying, well, we are in love, though, and this is what we do when we're in love. We're cohabitating. We're going to get married. It's no big deal, then. What do we say to them?
Well, what I can tell them is what the research says. And that is that women and men both are least likely to get married if they have cohabitated prior to marriage. And there's a higher divorce rate for those mm-hmm. who have cohabitated.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that when generally what happens, and there are many studies that show that when you cohabitate, you're not making a complete decision for marriage. You're saying, if this doesn't work out, we can always leave. So you actually go into the relationship with one foot in the relationship and one foot out just in case. And mm-hmm. so the relationships are not as strong, though emotionally you may be still bonded to that person. But the stronger relationships are those relationships where you make a decision. There's a concept called sliding versus deciding. Cohabitation is your sliding into the relationship. Marriage is you're making a decision and a commitment. It's like, we're not saying if this doesn't work out. We're saying this is going to work out. We're making a commitment to each other, for better or worse, richer or poorer, sickness and health, and whatever it takes for us to be here together and be happy together is what we're willing to do. Whereas cohabitation, you're always thinking, well, if it doesn't work out, then. And so you're leaving an opening or an out there. And you're also, for women in particular, sometimes I don't think the conversation is made clear or expectations of what you want out of the relationship. And I've, again, had seen many studies and had conversations with women who are waiting for the man to make the decision or to ask, even after they've had children, as opposed to them having an understanding prior to the cohabitating process. Mm-hmm. And studies do show you're more likely to divorce, and children are actually more likely to be abused in a cohabitating relationship than in a marital relationship.
Of course, as Christians, we are still always hope people of grace, and we do want to make it clear, because there could be people listening right now who have made that mistake. And maybe even, they're not cohabiting, but they've made a mistake of having sex before they got married. And we have to make it clear to them also that, yeah, you have created a barrier here, but your case is not insurmountable. You can still, by the grace of God and working together, make your relationships work.
And that's very important. I thank you for pointing that out. What I am presenting here is the science of what happens in the brain, what happens in the body when you are in a sexual relationship. And I mentioned earlier that it's values neutral, which means these hormones, oxytocin, vasopressin, dopamine, are going to be released regardless. And so if you get involved sexually prematurely and then you make an about face, or you realize, as you said, in a Christian relationship, you recognize you have committed an error, you make an about face, you change, and you forgive yourself. 1 John 1:9 says, if you confess your sins, he is faithful and just to forgive you and to cleanse you. And so he definitely does make a way, and I think you should also allow yourself to make an about face and to change your behavior. But in order to do that, you have to put in place behaviors and steps to change it. Good news, the brain can be rewired as well. And so many studies have shown, even with people who've had strokes, how they may have had a stroke and lose the ability to function in one limb or the other. But with proper rehabilitation, they can be many times brought back to use that limb, or certainly to use another limb in order to still get their needs met. And I'm saying the brain can be changed in a physical way, such as with a stroke, but the brain can also be remolded in making different decisions and putting different actions in place. One of the good things that I've had in teaching sex education courses, in teaching even in my practice, seeing how women can put steps in place and with counseling change their behaviors and accomplish their goals and dreams still. At the Medical Institute for Sexual Health, we have two resources that I would definitely recommend. The first is a book, Hooked, New Science on How Casual Sex is Affecting Our Young People, Our Children. And it talks about all of these hormones that I have mentioned. But over in the center of the book, it also talks about how different behaviors can get you the same oxytocin, the same vasopressin, the same dopamine reward without becoming sexually involved. So there's two things I'd like to say. One is if you have participated, you can make a contract with yourself, you can establish different behaviors to avoid continuing in the sexual activity. And the second is that you can avoid becoming involved in the first place by establishing there are certain behaviors I will do, there are certain behaviors I won't. I will get my dopamine reward with accomplishing or completing my education. There's nothing like a good high when you get an A on a test. I can tell you there is a study out of Purdue University that showed that young people who are involved in sex education classes actually did better on their standardized test for high school graduation than the young people who were not involved in the sex education classes or the abstinence classes. And the rationale or explanation was that the same discipline, self-control, delay of immediate gratification that you had to put in place to achieve academically were the same behaviors that did you well in your personal relationships as well. So, Nick, I hope I'm making that clear.
That
you can remold your brain by establishing different behaviors and putting in place those steps and those character traits that can help you accomplish that.
And go ahead, finish up, Rick.
And I was just going to say, and if you have already participated in those behaviors, you can make a different decision and establish different behaviors.
We're going to take our second break. We're talking with Dr. Frieda Busch. My name is Peters. This is the Deeper Waters Podcast. We'll be back after this break.
It's here, the official Grok Radio mobile app. Listen to your favorite Grok Radio programs on your iPhone, iPad, iPod, Kindle Fire, Android smartphone, and tablet. The best thing is, it's absolutely free. Download it now from the iTunes or Google Play App Store, or get a link at our website, cyiworldwide.com. Grok Radio, Christian radio that doesn't suck.
We're back with Dr. Frieda Busch. Our call number is 714-242-5180. If you have a question, we're talking about sex and the hookup culture. There are so many questions I'm going to ask you. But one thing I'm going to thinking right now, I'm seeing if this is connected with what you said a while ago about the highs that we can get and such as that. Before we got married, I wasn't really exactly the most confident person always that there was. I was having to learn how to be more assertive and such. But I know it's just a few months after we got married, all of a sudden I'd had this change around in my attitude. It wasn't because I'd learned or studied more. All I could figure was, it's because I've gotten married since then. And that, where in the past, what I was doing for work was kind of my vindication. My vindication at that point for one who affirmed. And so what women sometimes lose track of, I think, is the power that they have with their husbands or the men in their lives, that they can give them that same drive to succeed in the exact same way, the dopamine high. Is that kind of what you're saying also?
Well, I think when you have compatibility with someone, that's why I counsel young women is looking at more than just the physical activity, looking at the physical external portion of the man. For example, one of the hormones that I didn't mention in a discussion on the brain hormone was pheromone, which attracts a woman to a man physically, but also by the way he smells. And so she's influenced by the way he looks, by the way he swaggers or the way he smells, but not necessarily at whether he is got the character that she wants, whether he has the drive, all of the other things that make a man, the determination to succeed. And so what happens is they are influenced more when they are teenagers and the brain's not fully mature by the external of the man rather than the character of the person. When they are older, more mature, I think they make better decisions. So you're no longer looking at, does he look good, does he smell good, and, you know, how does he play football, but you're more concerned about, is he good? What is his character? What are his goals and dreams in life, and how is he going about accomplishing that? How does he treat people? You're more mature. That prefrontal cortex is giving you better able to judge the true character of the man.
You know, with what you were saying also along these same lines, you know, about cohabitation, I've spoken about this before, and I got really emboldened to speak about it more after hearing Eric Regnerant speak at the ITAF conference. I heard it through podcast. And he said pretty much what women are doing is telling men what they're worth. It's usually in a relationship, when does sex happen? It happens when the woman wants it to happen. Because if it happened when the man wanted it to happen, things would happen a whole lot more frequently. But the woman pretty much controls it. And so if a woman has sex on an easy basis outside of marriage or even just in cohabitation, she's actually lowering herself, unfortunately, even without knowing it, isn't she?
She is, and she is also more vulnerable to all of the altered self-esteem issues the sense of betrayal and abandonment, the guilt, the shame, all of that emotional baggage that she is now carrying with her. So not only has she lessened her value in the sight of the man, but in her sight, and I think that is very important. I just was talking to a group of young ladies recently who had read the Cosmo magazine article about having sex on the first date, and they were trying to evaluate, is this a good thing or is this not a good thing? And in that discussion, neither of the girls had any desire to be cheapened or lessened in their relationship with the young man. But yet, there was that potential. They all admitted if they were, quote, unquote, considered too easy, then the guy would not value them. And so when you look at what their long-term desires were, and most importantly, how they would feel about themselves, then they each decided, really, it almost didn't matter what the magazine said. I have to make this decision for myself.
Yep. There's a term that we've used here on the air, and we know what we mean by it, but I don't think it can reflect any sort of reality, and that's casual sex. Can there really be such a thing, quote unquote, as true casual sex?
Sexual activity involves all of you. And I'm not sure just how casual, or casual to me is a lower value than I believe most women, or men for that matter, label themselves. So it's almost like, do you want to be considered cubic zirconium, or do you want to be considered a diamond? Most people would want to be a diamond of value of, to themselves. That's what the self-esteem is about, as well as value to others. QZ is cubic zirconium is not of value. It may look good, it may smell good, but it's not real. I just think
Go on.
No, I just think that it's important for us to help young women in particular to understand their value and to understand that what they do now really matters. That hooking up is sex without a relationship. And if they really want a relationship, then they have to understand themselves better. And that means delaying sex until you have gotten to know more about the person.
Since you said hooking up, why don't you tell us just some about what exactly the hookup culture is and how extensive it is today?
Well, the hookup culture really is having sex, as I said, without relationship. It's a been reduced to a physical activity principally. The hooking up culture is also responsible for a lot more increase in emotional concerns for the young women in particular. Although young men, it has affected them. Studies have shown that those who are virgins are less likely, have a lower rate of depression. Those who are involved in the hookup culture are three times more likely to be depressed, and some have reported, even in college, that their rate of depression is so high that at times they're not able to function. Young men in particular are more likely to attempt suicide in breakups than even young women, and so it's the hookup culture is also fueling the sexually transmitted disease culture, in that there's a rise in sexually transmitted infections now. Even a study just came out this past week that has been talking about the increase in STIs in the United States. The CDC put out there are over 20 million sexually transmitted infections in the United States each year. And 50% or one half of those are in young people between ages 15 to 24. And that age group is only one fourth of the population of the United States. And yet, it's 50% or half of the sexually transmitted infections. And this is in the United States. And I will tell you that several states are calling it an epidemic. In that the diseases are rising, especially gonorrhea, chlamydia, and there is a strain of gonorrhea that is more resistant to the usual antibiotics that we have been using for it. And so that's a real concern to the public health community. Rising rates of STIs are fueled by multiple partners. And even when young people use condoms, it is not, in spite of the studies showing that there is an increased use of condoms, these statistics are still going up, which means two things to me. Either they're not using the condoms consistently and correctly, or the condoms are not as effective as they have been purported to be.
Part of me is sitting here thinking that if you got a young couple together and they're kind of in the throes of passion, they're not really going to be thinking rationally and saying, hey, we should interrupt this and get a condom on so we can be safe at that point. And even if they did remember that, things have to be put on exactly right or else that effectiveness is going to drop rather significantly.
Well, you've got two things. One, you've got either they're not using them and they're saying they're using them, or they're not using them properly, which is what you have just said. And part of that may be that they may start out with using them, but then if they decide to have a second encounter, then they may not use it or may reuse the same condom. So the improper use of it, and if they're not using it consistently and correctly with each act of intercourse, then they are exposing themselves. The other thing is most of these diseases, especially gonorrhea, chlamydia, HPV, HIV, have no symptoms. So you can't look at a person and say that they do have it or they don't have it. I mean, and there's no sign that the person is wearing to say I've got it, and people don't always tell the truth. So it's important that you get to know the person, spend time with them, make that commitment in a mutually monogamous marital relationship before you become involved. It's also important that you get tested. And that you get tested to determine whether you do or do not have a disease. The Center for Disease Control recommends that every time you change partners, you should be tested for an STI. And both partners need to be tested, not just one or the other. Because, like I said, 85% of gonorrhea is asymptomatic in women, and over 50% in men are totally unaware that they have it. HPV, the same. And herpes. These are common STIs that are on the increase. And I will tell you, Michael Douglas really, I thought, did a service recently when he announced that he acquired throat cancer from HPV because of oral sex.
Mm-hmm.
Very important, because a lot of people say, well, I'm not having sex. And they don't consider oral sex, anal sex, mutual masturbation as sex. They're just thinking penis in the vagina. But actually, any activity that stimulates you and arouses you for sexual gratification is sex. So it's not just limited to the penis and the vagina, but oral sex, anal sex, you can get any disease with those activities that you can get with sexual intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple partnering in particular drives the AIDS epidemic, because the more partners, the more exposure and the more risk that you have for acquiring these diseases. And again, you don't always have symptoms. And by the way, we don't have any cure for the viruses right now, HPV, HIV, herpes, all of those we treat symptoms or results, but there's mm-hmm. no cure for them.
You know, it's so amazing to me that in our country we're so worried about providing good health care and getting our economics taken care of. And it seems to me that one of the things that we could do to really lighten our economic burden is if all of us just said sex between one married man and one married woman for life and nothing outside of that. But we don't seem to really want to cross that line, no matter how much good it would do. And I guess it's, the media just doesn't want to say it, because most of us don't really want to have our fun interrupted.
Well, the thing about it is, when you have done, there have been other studies that have shown that when you survey people for sexual satisfaction, for frequency of sex, the rates are higher in married couples than they are in singles. And
mm-hmm.
so if you really want to have the best sex and you want to have it more frequent, you should get married.
Yep.
But, you know, when you look at the media and the movies and the TV, you get the impression that ball and chain, you know, marriage is seen as negative, and all of the movies show the bed hopping as fun. But they're not
mm-hmm.
recognizing that sexual satisfaction, that connectedness that we are innately, you know, designed to have, is best fulfilled in a mutually monogamous relationship. Somebody who cares about you and will be there for the long term, not just your body, but
yep.
cares about the person inside the body. And
yep.
so you have a misnomer for that as far as understanding weight until you're in a committed mutually monogamous relationship, and you'll actually have more fun, you'll have it more often, you won't have to worry about STIs and all of those other consequences, if you would. And the economics you mentioned just now shows that two-parent families have higher economic income, they have
mm-hmm.
the children do better physically, emotionally, spiritually, when they are raised by their biological parents. And these are not just my studies. These are studies that are done at other institutions that verify this. They also shows that the children are less likely to be involved in juvenile justice system. They achieve a higher education level
mm-hmm.
and therefore can really become independent of the parents when they are raised in that respect and are taught those values that will help them achieve their goals.
Okay, we're going to take another break about halfway through our program. I'm Nick Peters. Our guest is Dr. Frieda Busch. We're talking about the hookup culture. Our call number is 714-242-5180. We'll be back after this break.
Check out CYIWorldwide.com. CYIWorldwide.com, home of Grok Radio. Free music downloads, advice, prayer, and support. CYIWorldwide.com. Do you grok?
Are you tired of the same old corporate Christian music on the radio? Check out Music Surge on Grok Radio, playing Christian music that doesn't suck. Download episodes now at CYIWorldwide.com.
And we're back with Dr. Frieda Busch. I'd like to let you know, if you are listening in here next week, we are going to have Dr. Holly Ordway coming on. She's a professor at HBU, and she's going to be talking about literature and apologetics. That should be an interesting show, and HBU is certainly becoming an up-and-coming excellent place to get a very good education, especially with Christian apologetics. For now, though, we've got Dr. Frieda Busch in here having a very revealing discussion on hookup culture. Our call-in number is 714-242-5180. Okay, well, Dr. Busch, we've talked about STDs some, and that would also include the problem of teen pregnancy, but let's suppose we are sometime in the future here, and we've found a way we can treat all these STDs, STIs, there are no problem. We can prevent pregnancy easily. If there was any physical damage due to sexual activity, we can do corrective surgery. We can do all this supposedly low cost, easy, quickly. So would that eliminate all our problems? And could we then go, okay, now we can have all the casual sex we want, or would there still be problems with it?
Well, I would love to think that there are no consequences to what we do, but unfortunately, that's not the way it works. Mm-hmm. Sex is a whole body experience. I mean, all of you is involved in the sex.
Mm-hmm.
And so mind, body, and spirit. And so mm-hmm. regardless of whether you think there would be no consequences, if you just eliminated all the physical, let's only have children when we want them. Let's not have any sexually transmitted diseases at all. But what about the person who is inside the body, who has been hardwired by the Creator to have close attachments, to have meaningful relationships? And the one-night stand is not meaningful. The one-night stand, you know, you maybe can take a pill before you go into it, but regardless, and you take the pill, you don't get pregnant, you don't get an STI, but you still have an imprint in your brain that says something has transpired here. I have had him enter, or I have entered her. And after you're separated, you still remember that event, good, bad, or ugly.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, there is a study done at the University of California by a neuropsychiatrist that showed that even after a 20-second hug, let's say you don't have sex, just hugging somebody, you have released oxytocin in a woman's brain that bonds her and starts her to trust that other person. There is no antibiotic that's going to change that. There's no pill that's going to change that. That person will know that. Why do you remember that first sexual encounter that you had? Whether it was a mutual decision to have it, or whether it was by abuse, you still remember when that happened because there was a chemical and an emotional change that occurred in your brain. And that's a fact. So it's not just getting rid of the physical stuff. All of you is involved in a sexual relation. The two really become one whether you recognize it or not, whether you desire that or not. The fact is that it happens.
I think part of the problem that we have today is that we, in our culture today, we tend to treat sex as if it's a consumer good, just like food or water or most anything else. It's just something that you go out there and you get because you got a strong appetite, you want it, and that justifies your getting it.
Mm. Well, it's not just a consumer good. It is a human good, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
And so because we're humans, there's an old song I just thought of, a people need people.
Yep.
And that's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also thinking about, I don't know anybody who doesn't want a friend or doesn't have a friend or somebody that they would call just to talk. That's
yeah.
a relationship. And
mm-hmm.
that's just a part of, that's just an innate part of who we are as human beings.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you give us some examples from your practice of what you've seen in the hookup culture about how women's lives, and even in some cases men's lives, have been affected by having casual sex? You gave us one story about the girl who was 14 and been having sex since she was 12, but what about other women and men who are having multiple sexual partners? Can you tell us some examples?
Well, two examples come to mind immediately. One is a young woman who was 25 years old and
mm-hmm.
had 3 or 4 children by different men, and she was
mm-hmm.
currently cohabitating with a man, and he was not the father of either of the children. And she wanted
mm-hmm.
me to give her a female Viagra because she no longer enjoyed sex.
Mm-hmm.
So that can also be a consequence. If you have multiple partners, after a while, sex becomes meaningless because you aren't really getting the enjoyment out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have that desire, though, for it to be meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you have to change, make a different decision and change your behavior and put it into practice in order for there to be established a new thing. It's also important for young people to understand that they can learn from these experiences as well. If any of them are listening, you can recognize, for example, recently Angelina Jolie brought out that she had been given the opportunity to live with her boyfriend beginning at age 14.
Mm-hmm.
Yet when you look at the number of different partners she has had since age 14, I don't know really Angelina Jolie, but just looking at the outcome of the multiple relationships she's been in, I wonder if that is what she really desired for her life.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a flash. I wonder. And
yeah.
I would wonder, or I would like to caution anybody who would recommend that that become a lifestyle or an acceptable thing that parents would allow children to live with their boyfriends in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
Because research does not bear it out as being something that would be helpful. So if there are any parents who are considering that as a way to prevent STIs or pregnancy, I would refer them to the literature that does not support permitting that type of behavior in the long run as being beneficial for the young people. And there are many studies also that show that most parents want their children to delay sexual activity, not get sabotaged as far as their education, until they are older and that they are, have accomplished some of their goals.
Teens who become
sexually active earlier are, as I stated earlier, twice as likely to divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Once they do get married, they're more likely to have emotional difficulties, and this is for young men as well as for young women. And I don't know anybody who wants to say, well, when I grow up, I want to be married three or four times, or I want to have, you know, three or four babies by three or four different women or men. I don't know that anyone wants that as a goal. And yet, when we become involved in sexual activity early, when we have multiple partners, we're actually setting ourselves up to accomplish that.
I think it's very interesting when you talk about responding. Because what I've told people before about being married and sticking with one woman for life is my wife's the only woman I've definitely had any kind of sex with, of course. And what I say is, you know, several other guys might want to go out there and dive and wade into numerous shallow waters and such. I'll continue to dive into the ocean of one person. And I remember before I got married, I read a book and had R.C. Sproul, a Christian apologist, talking about how shortly after he got married, he and his wife went to see an uncle, and it's about 2 weeks afterwards, and his uncle's like, what do you think? And he said, it's terrific. And he said, you don't know about half of it yet. And R.C. said, I was saying, what does this old guy know that I don't? And he said, now 15 years later, I see what he was saying. And I think part of that is with married sex, the bonding stays there, and things just do get better and better over time. But if you treat sex casually, the bonding goes away, and things get worse and worse because you keep trying to see like if each person can give you a better high than the other person could.
And I can tell you that if you've only had one person, then you only have one imprint in your brain. And so for you, that person is the high, that person is the bomb, because they have released that oxytocin, that vasopressin, that dopamine in you, and you have been rewarded for that relationship. And they are also the best sexual partner, so you have no other comparison in your mind to confuse you as to whether there is or is not somebody out there better. Better based on what? If you are satisfied, they are satisfied, then that is the best sex. And it's the relationship with the person. What they do Monday through Friday, or Monday through Sunday, 7 days a week, how do they treat you? How do they respect you? What type of friendship do you have that even makes the sex in bed even better? I had a young man once who said to me, I would love to just have sex with my wife on one time. And I said, what do you mean? I'd love to only have sex with my wife once. And what he meant was that every time he would have relations with her, he'd get flashbacks from past relationships. And it was difficult for him to release those imprints or those flashes that came because they were in his brain. I'll tell you, one of the things that I have learned in counseling women and in through my Christian background is that you have to release those other people, men, women, in order for you to lay aside every weight, if you would, as the scriptures would say. And what I have advised women to do and men is if you get a pencil and paper and you make a list of everybody you ever had sex with, that you release that person. You ask them to forgive you. You forgive them. You ask God to forgive you. And you release them. And you cross that person off. And then you go to the next person on the list. Now, I would tell you this. I would suggest that when you get through with the list, you tear it up or you burn it. But I've had so many people tell me how much freer they feel when they go through that exorcism, if you would.
Yeah.
They don't even realize they're carrying all of those images and carrying all of those people with them until mm-hmm. they let them go consciously.
Yeah.
And that way they're freer then to enjoy the relationship that they are in.
Dr. Bush, we've got someone who looks like they're calling in wanting to ask a question. You ready to take a caller?
Sure.
Carla, you're on the air of Dr. Bush.
Yeah, how you doing?
How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm not too bad, not too bad. I just happened to be listening in, and I thought I'd give you a call. I had a situation. I'm a born-again Christian now, but I wasn't when this took place over 20 years ago now. And I met up with this woman, we began going out. And it was a very intense relationship, basically sexually. The only problem was that she would not leave me alone. Like, I was in a situation where I was boarding at a home, and I also was renting a spot to do work in. And this woman would continually follow me everywhere. And no matter how many times I tried to tell her, like, you must have had a life before you met me. Go back to doing what you were doing. Let me do what I do, and we'll meet in the middle, and we'll be happy. But she wouldn't listen, and she kept interfering with my life. And she would do things like when I did spend time with her, like, spending the night and all that, she would, I'd wake up in the night, and she'd be, staring at me, just laying there staring at me, and it kind of, disturbed me a bit. So no matter how many times I would tell her, give me some space here. People are starting to complain in my life because you're always there. She wouldn't listen. So finally I thought, well, the only way to get through to her is to break off with her. And I figured, normal situation, you say, okay, I've asked you so many times, and that's what I told her. I've asked you and asked you and asked you. You're not listening, so I'm going to have to break off with you. And so I did, but instead of the normal situation, her coming to me and saying, well, let's talk about it, she had her family come after me and threaten my life. So anyways, that, of course, closed the deal right there, and I broke it off with her for good and never saw her again. But when things like that happen in your life, I mean, what would you say would have been her problem?
I think I need a psychology or psychiatry degree instead of an OBGYN degree in order to handle that. But I would say that she definitely bonded to you more than mm-hmm. you bonded to her. And we've talked about how men and women's reactions are different in many respects.
Mm-hmm.
But it also seems as though she may have had an emotional, psychological issue as well. But
yeah.
What that also points out to me is the value in waiting before you become sexually involved with somebody until you get to know the person. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm sure your sexual activity, releasing those hormones, the oxytocin and the vasopressin, in particular oxytocin in her situation, had her trusting and attaching to you more. And it wasn't just about the enjoyment of the sexual act, but it was the fact that she became attached and bonded to you. And
mm-hmm.
that's a harder bond. Sex can make it stronger
mm-hmm.
than it would have been if you had never had sex.
Yeah.
And therefore, I'm saying your example just really encourages me to continue to advise young people, wait to have sex until after you get to know the person.
Mm-hmm.
One night stand doesn't give you that opportunity. I'm sure if you had been with her over time and saw
mm-hmm.
how possessive she was and how perhaps unbalanced mentally she was, you would have never sealed the deal essentially by becoming sexually active with her.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been easier to break off that relationship.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, it was a, like, I was shocked, you know, because a normal reaction to something like that is, well, you know, gee, I should have listened to him. You know, he asked me to stop hounding him. I wouldn't listen, so now he's broken off with me. I better smarten up. But her reaction was getting her whole family and threatening me. Well, of course, that was insanity right there. And then she had the nerve. She was standing there as the family cornered me in the middle of the downtown area where I lived, and threatening me. And then she said, well, I had nothing to do with that. And I looked at her. I said, how could you say you had nothing to do with it when you were standing right there with them? you know?
Well, and I'm sure if you had gotten to know her personally, or personality and all that, better, you would have made a different decision as far as becoming sexually active with her. So that would certainly be something I would encourage any listener on this call. I say to the young women, get to know what's in their big head before you go to below the waist to find out what's in the little head.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't like that, then you don't go any further. You don't go below the waist.
Yeah, that is so true, you know. And I learned it the hard way. Now, I mean, that was, you know, 20-odd years ago. I'm a born-again Christian now, and I'm married and have a wonderful relationship with my wife, who is also born again. And, you know, everything's very well balanced in our life.
Well, and I can tell you, by you being a Christian, you could probably sing the song Amazing Grace, I Once Was Blind,
But Now I See. Yeah, that's right.
And now I see.
Amen. Amen.
And I hope you're able to share your experience. I mean, I'm not saying give details, but able to share your experience with others, and especially if you were working with young men, you could tell them about your experience or warn them about getting to know the whole person and not just that one body part, because the hip bone is connected to the rest
of
the body.
Yes, that's so true. Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds
well,
like
I would just like
mentor.
To say to any young person listening, you know, yeah, get to know the person properly before, you know, having any intimate relationship with someone. Get to know them. Get to know that you want to spend the rest of your life with them, because that's really what it's all about, finding that one true mate, that soulmate, that you can be with for the rest of your life, and having a balanced relationship. It's not just about sex, or it's not just about, you know, whatever. It's a balanced relationship in where both partners have a goal, and that goal is worked in so many different areas in our life, and we're as one in that goal, and we come out together as a partner in life, and that's where it's at, you know. And with God, you know, that is a big possibility, and it should be a stronghold in the relationship, having God in the center of that relationship and following His direction and His word. Amen.
Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I'd like to talk about that a little bit more, but it's time for us to take a quick break, and we'll be back after this break. More from Dr. Frieda Busch.
Hey, this is Minister Grock. Thanks for listening. Although Grock Radio is free, there are costs to upkeep the website, podcast, and purchase Bibles and materials for street ministry. And while we are happy to pay this ourselves out of pocket, we will gladly accept any gift if you feel led to support the shows and our street ministry. You could send a gift or love offering through our website at cyiworldwide.com. Thanks for your support, and God bless.
And we're back with Dr. Frieda Busch. Our call-in number is 714-242-5180. I'd like to remind you that our show is indeed listener-supported. I don't get paid a single penny for what I do on here. Everything I do on here is just my own generosity, taking my own time and such. So please do consider making a donation to what is done here. And if you want to donate to me personally, you can go to my blog at deeperwaters.wordpress.com. There's a donate button. You can make donations to me through Risen Jesus, and you can make donations to me through Ratio Christi Issues and Answers. And Dr. Busch, before we go on, you'd also like people to know how they can donate to what you're doing, right?
Yes, I'm with the Medical Institute for Sexual Health in Austin, Texas, and we actually, our website is www.medinstitute.org, and we provide medically accurate scientific information to arm parents and young people to avoid the consequences, if you would, of premature sexual activity and out-of-wedlock pregnancy. So we are trying to inform them on how to get their goals and their dreams achieved without the consequences of premature sexual activity. We are not just a, I would say, a sexual health organization, though that is our name, but we are looking at all health aspects and medically accurate scientific information with studies and with information to help them make the healthiest choices for their lives.
And I should point out also that this is, from a worst point, our own guests who come on here every single time, they are taking their own time to do this. I'm not able to pay them anything. They do this out of their own generosity. And so please respond with some of your own generosity. Now, this last caller we had calling, I thought it was a very interesting story, because it does show that women do tend to bond much more emotionally than men do. I mean, my own marriage, I know there is a strong emotional bond that shows up, but it's just a lot stronger with women. The guy was able to say, well, I think I should be able to move on, and she wasn't willing to take it at all, and had a very, very strong negative reaction at the thought of not getting to be with the guy. Was that your take on it as well?
That was my take on it, and a lot of times they think that casual sex is just all pleasure and enjoyment, and that nobody's going to be hurt or anything like that. But there's no such thing as victimless casual sex. There's no such thing really as casual sex, because the whole person, body, mind, and spirit, is involved in the sexual act. And you're not going to be the same once you leave that relationship. And so that's one of the things that makes, we haven't mentioned really child abuse very much, or sexual abuse in this conversation, but there's, that's why they use the word abuse, is because the person who is taken advantage of in that situation is never the same again. You can't undo what has been done to you. You can't unawaken what has been awakened in you. So we really, I would like to put a point in for parents to really emphasize being parents and to raise your children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. There are studies also that have shown that when taking surveys of young people, who influences them the most is parents, more than their peers. And even though we haven't talked very much about media here, even more than media, if you have established values for your young people, standards that you want them to live by, and especially if you're modeling the behavior that you desire and expect from them, they're going to listen to you. They're going to follow what you say. And they may act like they don't hear you or act like you don't say, may even give you some lip. But if you don't say it, they don't have any guide to go by at all. And so parents, I would just definitely say that you can't give in to what the different magazines say or what the different Hollywood stars say. What do you want for your children? What are the dreams, goals, and desires that you have for them, and how can you help them achieve those? And for you to be steadfast and supportive and loving, not authoritarian, you know, putting the hammer down, this is the way you're going to do it, but no, supportive, guiding, leading them with principle and loving them. Give them a hug sometimes. Just let them know. Studies have shown that if you spend one meaningful meal a day with your child, you're going to have more influence on them than anybody else. And that time, you can be talking about, how was your day? Or what did your teacher say? Or how was, if they're young adults who are working, well, tell me something about what happened today. Letting them know you care can go a long way. A long way. Yeah. So I would encourage parents, shout out to you who are doing it, to continue to be steadfast.
You know, something I've been saying for a while also is that it seems many times in the church, we're hesitant to really talk about this topic because, you know, it just seems inappropriate to some people and such. But what I've always said is, like, our young people, they're going to get some message about sex. If we don't give them ours, they're only going to get a message from the media and the world, and that's not going to be a good message for them to get.
Not at all. I agree wholeheartedly that when you started out in the conversation, you were saying people think Christians are not for sex. But I tell you, that is not the case at all. When you look at how sex began with Father God creating it and making it good and enjoyable, it has been taken and being perverted. But Christians of all people should be saying, this is good, and we should be supporting and making marriage look good by our relationships with our young people. So I would say the nature with God's, the hormones that I've mentioned, and with the fact that we are hardwired to connect to each other, that should take precedence over anything else that the world has to say about it. You know, the Medical Institute, I co-authored a book with Dr. Joe McElhaney, who is the founder of the Medical Institute, called Girls Uncovered, and it's talking about how our sexualized culture in America has left our young ladies vulnerable and uncovered, essentially, to all of the consequences that we've talked about, the STIs and the out-of-wedlock pregnancy and the abuse and misuse. And that, again, is not the way our culture started out. The mating of young adults was part of what was a part of a social atmosphere where young adults went to older adults and expected them to help them with the selection of their mates. And part of it was because the future of the race depended on it. But part of it was the woman's fertility can be injured by these sexually transmitted diseases. It's not always a guarantee that a woman will get pregnant, especially if she's had gonorrhea or chlamydia. And that is something that if you wait to have sex until you're married, a virgin male and a virgin female should not be giving each other disease. And so you're more likely to be able to reproduce and, again, for the society to continue. But in America, we have taken down this hedge of protection. We give very little advice to the young ladies other than make sure you're taking your pill or your shot or whatever the birth control is, and to the young men to use a condom. But that's not really protection, as was mentioned earlier. It may reduce your risk for some of the diseases, but not all. Some
I find
pregnancy,
that...
but nothing for the heart. And I will tell you quickly, I just thought about, I haven't mentioned the effectiveness of condoms here, but there are many studies, and the CDC will tell you that the number one way to prevent pregnancy is to abstain sexually until you are in that committed relationship. The number one way to reduce sexually transmitted diseases is to delay sex until you're in that committed relationship with one person. And to reduce your risk, that's where condoms and contraception come in. And it's important to understand the reason why is because even the best protection for HIV, which is a disease that we know leads to AIDS and can lead to death, is only 82% effective. So when you read the label on the condom package, it'll say 99%. And that's what most young people, I was at a college recently and asked how much protection did they expect from the condom. And one young man had a condom in his pocket, and he pulled it out and held it up. He said, 99%. I said, where did you get that percent from? And he said, well, it's right here on the label. He had never considered that the manufacturer put 99% on it because he was trying to sell his product. But the CDC says it's 82% effective, and that's the best that it has to offer, is 82% effective. And I don't know anybody who would put their life on the line knowing that something would only provide them 82% effectiveness. But that's
true. It's so odd about we talk about the females being uncovered, and I think this would tie into what you were saying, that the feminist movement really started with wanting to get respect for women, to show women are equal and such, and it seems to me it's ended up turning women more into objects than anything else.
Oh, absolutely. Especially, like I said, when you have half of the diseases, sexually transmitted diseases in the United States being in the 15 to 24-year-old age group, and they are also some of the most sexually active at that time. As a matter of fact, one in 14 girls has a sexually transmitted infection. One in four teen girls in the United States has an STI. And when you, the Youth Risk Behavior Surveys have shown that by the time they finish high school, at least 60% of the young ladies have already had sex at least once. And so we've got the young ladies participating in a behavior as though it were a sport, as opposed to being a life-affirming, lifetime, you know, experience, because we're not giving them the importance or significance of it as it should be.
And that when women just give out sex so easily, they do ultimately turn themselves into objects. They do let themselves become just simply bodies for men, which is what they had set out to avoid doing, that even abortion meant to help keep women from being just treated like an object ultimately makes them an object.
And I don't know that they really understand that, because when they do, they change their behavior. I had a young woman who had a PhD and had delayed a committed relationship until she was finished with all of her education. But in that time period, she had had 7 or 8 abortions because she was not ready for a relationship. And now here she is, got her doctorate, and is wanting a meaningful relationship, but she doesn't know how, because she has practiced delaying a meaningful relationship, but she didn't practice delaying sexual activity. And now she doesn't know how to have a meaningful relationship. And when you ask, do you think you could have gotten married during that time period and still been able to achieve your doctorate degree? And her answer is, looking back on it, yes. But we, in our world, are selling sex as a separate issue from the whole person. And that's where we've got back, need to get back to this being a whole person experience. And you can't disconnect it. We left our young people vulnerable to simple things. And they're not simple. Are we saying it's just a thing or it's casual sex is okay? But it is not victimless. We've got a lot of walking wounded because we have not put it in its proper perspective. And as you say, whether it's reconnecting it for young women, who I do believe, and I'm not trying to be sexist, but I do believe if they raise a standard, the men will rise up to it.
Yep.
And I think it's important for the young men to also raise their own standards. I encourage young people to develop contracts with themselves. There are some things I will do. There are some things I won't do. And then when they go into a relationship with, whether it's a young man or the young woman, you make sure they understand. There are some things I will do. There are some things I won't do. And if they can't understand that or they're not willing to understand it, then you have a decision to make right then at the beginning of the relationship whether you will continue in that relationship or not.
Well, we're going to go and take our last break. When we get back, I think I'd like to wrap this up on an important point here. So we'll be back after this break.
Oh, yeah. Hey, folks, it's Will ZPI, and you guys got to check out CYIWorldwide.com, home of the Grok Show, free MP3s, music, advice, and even prayer support. That, again, is CYIWorldwide.com. Check it out.
Okay, we're back with Dr. Frieda Busch. Our call number is 714-242-5180. We've been talking a lot about the mistakes that have been made and such. So why don't we, in this final section, talk about the healing process and the positive benefits more and more when things are done right. Because there are some people out there who I'm sure are listening saying, I've really messed up. I really want to get things going better. And there could be even some married people who are saying, you know, this is, we've never messed up really, but this has taught us that we want to be handling our own marriages differently. So what can we say to these people out here who are listening who want to go better from here?
Well, I would say the good news is that you have acknowledged that you can make a change. You have acknowledged I should say, a repentance, which is really making an about face. And once you do that, not only do you have to say, Father, forgive me for I have sinned, but you now need to forgive yourself and stop beating yourself up about the past. Then you can set in place those behaviors that will help you achieve the very thing that you desire. You can, as I told the gentleman on the call a few minutes ago, make a list of everybody that you've had relations with and release them. Release yourself from the guilt and the shame. And even when your memory in your brain will bring it back up to you, you can speak to it and say, that is covered by the blood. And then you make sure that you continue in the behaviors that now are going to help you achieve what it is that you would like. There is a number of scriptures that you can go through to help you to remember and to be healed. In Philippians 4 through 8, it talks about now what you will think on these things, and that you will experience the peace of God as a result of this thinking, changing your mind, if you would. You can memorize scriptures such as 1 Corinthians 10:13 that says,
no temptation has ever come except that which is common to man.
And the reason I say that is because you will be tempted again.
Yeah.
But you have assurance that God is faithful. So even when you're weak, he is faithful. And he said he would provide you a way of escape.
Yep.
And also in the 12th chapter, the first and second verse of Romans, it tells you that you are to present your bodies as a living sacrifice. That's your reasonable service. So when you consider that God is faithful, you confess your sins, he's willing and just to forgive you. And he's also, when you're tempted again, to provide you a way of escape. I mean, it's like he'll say, honey, don't go there. And you can recognize it's him that is speaking. The devil's not going to tell you not to go there. And then you can say, I will present my body to you as a living sacrifice.
And we can also say in the Romans verse, the very next verse, Romans 12:2 says to be transformed by renewing your mind. And that goes back to the Philippians 4 message.
And it also shows you about brain molding. The fact that I spent the first hour of this presentation talking about how sex is a whole body experience, and it begins with the thoughts in your brain. But just as you can initiate a thought and set an action in place that molds that thought that leads you to the unhealthy behavior, you can also do the same for the healthy behaviors. So the more partners you have, the more you set in place unhealthy attachments, you can remold that brain by changing your behavior, by first changing your thoughts and establishing a different pattern. Good news, the Lord didn't give you a command without giving you the ability to carry out that command. And that's the thing that I love about the Lord.
I think also in marriage, we can say is that it's so hard to understand how this is different for each person in it, that men can too often make a mistake of treating their wives as just objects of pleasure and ignoring them a lot the rest of the time. And women, on the other hand, have the problem that sometimes they can downplay how important sexuality is to a man and think, well, that's just all he wants. We can make a similar mistake, but in different ways. And your talk kind of inspires me to think that we definitely need to realize how important it is that if we think the world around us is disregarding marriage, what I've always said is the world is disregarding marriage because the church did it first. And if we want to show how important marriage is in our society, we need to be living it as well.
Well, I can tell you that my husband and I have been married 44 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk to young people about the studies that show who has the best sex, and
mm-hmm.
the studies show that the people who have sex more often and the people who rate it as more satisfying are married people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's just young married people. I think it's for people who've been married a long time as well. The bond mm-hmm. gets stronger and it gets more enjoyable as you
mm-hmm.
stay together with that person. They know you. They know your likes and dislikes. And they know
mm-hmm.
how to please you, and that is their goal. And even as you get older, you still enjoy being with that person, and you don't have to worry about sexually transmitted diseases. You don't have to worry
mm-hmm.
about just the whole myriad of other issues that you, as a young person, I say out there on the hunt, is looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I would just like
yeah.
to encourage parents again to just say
mm-hmm.
to the young people, you're growing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're not grown yet.
Mm-hmm.
Wait for some of these other issues, some of these other relationships
mm-hmm.
until you are more fully developed physically, but also in the brain cells, can make better
mm-hmm.
decisions as you get older. Now is the time for you to be spending, completing your education. Get your dopamine high from succeeding with your grades.
Mm-hmm.
Get a scholarship to go to college because you concentrated
yep.
on, you know,
mm-hmm.
achieving academically. Enjoy the emotional high of participating in sports, football, basketball, soccer, cheerleading, you know, the drill spot, all of these things, or piano, music. It not only soothes the soul, it can help you, again, get
mm-hmm.
scholarships and the like, and enjoy. There's so many
mm-hmm.
other ways you can get the reward and the satisfaction
mm-hmm.
from the dopamine without becoming physically involved in sexual activity. And
mm-hmm.
just get your education, achieve some of your goals and dreams before you commit sexual activity, which can really sabotage your goals and dreams and delay you getting what it is that you were created to achieve.
And if these people do exactly what my wife and I did, and that's wait to your marriage, how will those same drives affect them when they get married then? That, just to give the other side of a coin to this.
I would say that you can, sex is more satisfying. A
mm-hmm.
man is rated higher in marriage
mm-hmm.
than it is
mm-hmm.
outside of marriage because,
mm-hmm.
you know, the person may or may not have your best interest at heart. And
mm-hmm.
it's expected that the person in marriage cares about you as much as you care about yourself. So you got a whole different dynamic. And we know that those people who cohabitate earlier are less likely to get married, or if they do, they're less likely to stay married. There's a higher divorce rate.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that if you're not married, you're more likely to have multiple partners, and with multiple partners, you're more likely to get exposed to sexually transmitted infections or to get
mm-hmm.
pregnant out of wedlock and to have to make the decision whether you have an abortion or not, and there are a whole bunch of
mm-hmm.
consequences associated with abortion,
mm-hmm.
which we've not really
yeah.
talked about on this show so far. But it just unencumbers and makes things a whole lot easier if you delay sex until that committed relationship in marriage.
Well, we've got a few minutes left. Would you like to quickly touch on some of the effects of abortion?
Yes, one of the first things I'd say is you got to recognize that the person inside of your body is another human being. So it's not just a gob of tissue. It is a real person. And it is not just a part of your body as a woman, but it is composed of the male and the female having come together. So only 23 of those chromosomes belong as a part of your genetic pool, and 23 come from others. So that person that is then conceived and delivered is another person, unique and different from you. It is not a part of your body. It is not your choice to, I would say, kill another human being. That's literally what abortion is. And you will never be the same, whether you see it that way or not. You'll never forget that you were pregnant. You'll never forget you were unpregnant. And the consequences emotionally are great, because there are many studies that have shown the psychological effect of abortion on women. But it also is physically can injure you, making you incapable of having pregnancy or achieving pregnancy or delivering when you think you are ready to achieve it. And I can't tell you the consequences that is to recognize that the only child you may have ever had, you killed through abortion. There are just a lot of physical consequences beyond the ending of that baby's life. And I think it's important for them to understand that. There's risk of infection, excessive bleeding, possible hysterectomy, injury physically, even if you have the plan B or take the morning after pill. And by the way, Nick, I know young ladies in college in particular who are using the morning after pill more than the recommendation on the label says. They're using it if they have unprotected sex. So they, the label packaging says once a month, no more than once a month, but they may use it four or five times a month. And the hormonal changes that can occur to a woman as a result of this, the research doesn't even know what all they can do. So I would just caution young women to recognize that abortion is serious. It doesn't just kill a baby, but it injures the woman physically and psychologically as well as spiritually.
Well, we've only got about 2.5 minutes left. I remind listeners that next week, Holly Ordway is going to be on the show talking about literary projects. I hope you'll be back for that. But about 2 minutes and 20 seconds left. Where can our listeners go if they want to find out more about you and find out how to support you, and any final words you want to say?
Well, first of all, I'd say the Medical Institute for Sexual Health is the source of the scientific information that I've presented here. Medinstitute.org, MEDINSTITUTE.org. We have, they can purchase literature there. We have pamphlets that can be used in schools or in churches that can talk about each of these activities. It talks about the emotional consequences. We got information on STIs as well as condoms, as well as information on parenting. We have the two books that I've mentioned here, Girls Uncovered, How Our American Sexualized Culture Affects Young Women, as well as Hooked, the book talking about the effect of sex on the brain. And each of those don't just leave you with the consequences, but also talk about how you can make decisions and set activities in place to achieve your desires, and how parents can help, how society can help, and how even health professionals can help. And that's medinstitute.org. And you can also go to that website and make donations as well.
Well, Dr. Bush, I really want to thank you for coming on the Deeper Waters podcast, and I hope we'll see you back again here sometime.
Well, I really do thank you for the opportunity, and I would just like to say that because it is so important that we understand that young women can make better decisions about their health, and we're not just sexual objects, we are. Sex is a part of the whole person. It is made and designed to be enjoyable, and we want them to understand that casual sex is not victimless, and we want them to get enjoy and get the best sexual experience in a healthy relationship.
And amen. Thank you for saying that. And we gotta go at this point, but we'll be back next week, and I'll see you then.
Thank you.